Okay, keep it down. Video. Hey, showtime. All right.
Sammy Hagar in the Motor City, man. Red Rocker Lager. You're known as a tequila guy, Santo, Beach Bar Rum. Now beer. How did you get into beer?
I've always wanted to make beer because I know my fans are beer drinkers. You know, I've been pouring tequila down their throats for like, you know, 35, 40 years. But I made beer. I almost made it like three times. Twice with some big brewing cup, you know, like the one of the number one, number two type beer companies in the world. And I was going to do it with Cabo Wabo. I was going to make Cabo Wabo Cerveza. And we had a recipe. I worked on it for about a year and a half with them. Had a deal, not signed, sealed, and delivered. But, and then I, Grupo Campari came along and bought Cabo Wabo tequila from me. And they bought the trademark for booze. And they didn't want to make beer. And then the beer appears, oh, you know, they tried to work out a deal, and it went and went, and then it just kind of fell apart. And I was happy because, you know, the deal with Cabo Wabo was so lucrative. I mean, it changed my life. But I've always wanted to make beer. Then I was going to work some smaller breweries. Then I found out that like this one. But then when I found out the difficulties of shipping across the country and having a beer go bad, and they weren't able to make those things. But Eric Schubert, who came along and said, you know, we want to trademark Red Rocker for beer. I said, well, how are we going to do this? And he has a new plan. And one of them is just do it here in Michigan, where you can ship and do anything, not too far away. And just do it right. So just be small for now, and then make deals with other microbreweries around the country, other breweries, and have it made locally. And once we start growing, that's hopefully the plan, which has got me interested again. And number two, it's freaking Detroit. Come on, the rock and roll capital of the world, in my opinion. And number two it's also a place, you know, it's an industrial town. It's a blue collar town. It's my kind of fans town. It's the auto industry, which is my first love, our cars, you know. I mean, I've been a car collector from day one. First $5,000 check I got from Montrose, I bought a Porsche that cost $5,100.
Oh, man, oh, man.
And I said, oh, man, I lost $100 on that. So, it's really a passion of mine, and it just seems to fit. Yeah. You know, I like the American-made aspect, even though it's a Mexican-style lager. It's American-made right here in Motor City. Yeah. And I'm proud, man. I think it's awesome. It kind of gives me a home away from home here. You know?
You have a massive fan base here in Detroit. I mean, going back to Montrose, you talk about Detroit, you know, just how crazy of a rock and roll town it is. Did that influence you growing up when you started out making music, some of those Detroit bands?
Oh, yeah. First of all, Ted Nugent, the first time I saw Ted Nugent, I was already making music, but I hadn't made it yet. And I was more of a Van Morrison kind of guy. Yeah. I was in the van. I was a singer, songwriter, writing love songs to the girls. And I saw Ted Nugent. I said, hey, hold on here. And then Amboy Dukes. And I said, man, that dude. So, yeah, and then honestly, and then when I got signed to Capitol Records, Bob Seger was on Capitol Records same time. Same guy signed us, John Carter signed both of us. And I got to know Bob a little bit and had a huge influence on my lyrics. My songwriting, you know. Bob was, man, if Bob came out today, he'd be a country artist.
Yeah.
And he'd be huge. Just like he was anyway. But, yeah. You know, he don't need to come out today. Bob's fine. But yeah, Detroit, you know.
Yeah.
And I would say not so much Alice Cooper, but Alice was a dear friend.
Sure.
And, but you know, I didn't want to be a shock rocker.
right.
I wanted to be a pretty boy.
Yeah. You know, the cool thing about, you know, Red Rocker Lager is, you know, it's one of your latest business ventures. But, I mean, I read your book, Red, and you had a bike company. You had, I think you had housing, apartments. You had a travel company. I mean, you've been doing business way before even Cabo Wabo. So you've always had that business mind, right? I mean, how did that all go into play for Red Rocker Lager?
It's silly as it sounds. My Italian mother, we grew up poor, single mom. My dad died at a really young age, and he was an alcoholic. Odd that I'm in alcohol business, but my mom, who raised me since I was a little 3 or 4 years old, raised four kids.
Yeah.
she would always say when I asked for my guitar, I started playing guitar, then I started playing in bands, and she always would say, hey, you know, you really got to have a real job, you know, like you can't rely on that music. And you see all those people that get rich and famous and movie stars, and they die, you know, alcoholic, drug addicts, poor. And she goes, you know, if you're going to make, if you're going to do this, you're going to invest your money. And I thought, I kind of took that to heart, because I didn't know if I was going to make it or how long if I did. And when I started making it, I didn't know how long I was going to make it. You know, like I saw bands come and go, you know, really for me, now that I've been in the industry so long, if I'd have known I was going to make it music as long as I have, I probably wouldn't have worked so hard at other things. Stop mowing lawns, you know what I mean? I would have stopped that early. You know?
Yeah.
No, it just was, you sit there and you think, you have money, what are you going to do with it? Stick in the bank and just say, here's how much I have in the bank. You don't feel that.
Yeah.
So I like to invest in myself and my other dreams and in my mother and in my family. You know, most of my businesses are run by a family member. You know, my real estate things are, my family members live in them. My apartments were built by my brother-in-law, my sister, you know, and they ran the apartments. There's just no better way to do it. You know, you just hand it over to your family and then you do a lot of charity things. But I got used to being a business, thinking business-wise. It's not business. I don't run my damn businesses, man. If I had to run them, I wouldn't do them.
Right.
I'm busy. I'm an artist. So, but the creation of this and the creation of that can, and the things, my art director, Todd Galoppo, you know, I worked with him on that. I worked with the distiller on the flavor, I mean, with the brewmaster on the flavor. I'm part of it every step. I don't just put my name on anything. I own every one of them. I'm a partner with other people because they have to run the business for me. But I'm not just a businessman. But I don't believe in making money with money. I got to say that. Sorry, folks, for all you guys out there, stock guys. It's like, I just soon go to Las Vegas and have fun than throw it, you know, into the stock market,
right,
and
right,
stick
right.
it in a bank. How much interest can I make, you know? I don't like making money with money. I like making money with my back. Say, man, pick up your guitar. You go out and play a song. Pay me $5, we're cool. You know what I mean? Dig a ditch with a shovel. Say, hey, ditch is done, pay me my money. That's the way I like to make money. I'm an old school to make a living on your own. So that's why I like business. I'm on a level financially where I can do big projects and we make jobs, create jobs. See, now I do it for other reasons.
Right.
I did it to stay rich and so I could stay wealthy. You know, I didn't want to be poor again ever. No, God. But now that it's done, I realize now I do it for other reasons, and I give a lot of money away. A lot of money away. I don't brag about that because it's not stuff you brag about, but I feed people, I house people. I do. That makes me feel real good.
Yeah, it makes a
difference.
That's
why I want success. Yeah. This has got to be a success because this way I can help more people.
Yeah.
You know? So if you ask me what I like to do, I like to help people.
Yeah.
And I like to play music.
And you inspire people with music too. The Circle, you guys just had a massive show last night. How cool is it that this is the retrospective band? You know, you got Montrose in there, you got Solo, you got Van Halen, you got Solo, you got Chickenfoot, you got all that good stuff, and it all comes together, and people get everything.
I might have the best set list in the world.
Yeah, right?
You know, I mean, even Paul McCartney, he can only play Paul McCartney and the Beatles.
Yeah.
I can play Montrose, Chickenfoot, Van Halen, Sammy Hagar early, Sammy Hagar later. The Circle's got our own trip now. We've made a few records. Even HSAS. I wouldn't compare myself to Paul McCartney. That was a joke, folks. But I got a pretty damn good set list.
Yeah. I was going to say, you got to put Missing You in the set list. Do you guys do that, Missing You?
And from HSAS.
You know, Hot and Dirty, something like that? That's a killer album, man. Yeah. That album was...
Well, I did Wonder Shade of Phil recently.
Okay, yes.
You know, which is not my song, but it's, I think, one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yeah.
But that was HSAS. But wow, that's good. That's deep, brother. Missing You.
Yeah, dude, that's one of my favorite albums.
Yeah.
You know?
That was live as a mother.
Yeah, straight up, man.
We didn't fix a lot of stuff on air.
You and Neil ever thought about? I had to ask if you and Neil ever thought
Neil
about.
Neil and I talk a lot.
I know you guys are busy.
Neil's got his hands full with Journey.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
They work more than I do.
Yeah.
I don't need a second band.
Yeah.
I got, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The Collection 2 came out. When you heard those remasters from Don Landy, what did that feel like? Does that take you back to...
Oh, yeah, you don't know. You don't know because anything I do, I'm involved, right?
Yeah.
So I had to listen to every single one of those things, one at a time. He had finished OU812, and I listened to it on record, and I listened to the CD, right?
Yeah.
And, oh, God, man, you want to... take me back deja vu from Balance Records.
Yeah.
It was heavy. The heaviest thing was when I listened to the outtakes, the songs that we didn't get along doing, the songs that were kind of like we fought about that didn't make the records, you know, the ones that were kind of unfinished, and especially that song Crossing Over, Eddie wrote for a dear friend long before I even knew him, that committed suicide or died or something. Eddie wrote that song for him, but it wasn't no lyrics, it was just music. And when he played me that when I joined the band, on the first album, I said, oh, let me finish that. He said, oh, no, this is, you know, for me, not second record. Ed, let's do that song. No. And then finally our manager died, Ed Leffler. And I said, Ed, I'm going to finish that song. I'm going to write the lyrics and I'm going to sing that mother. And he let me do it. He played every instrument on there. Mm. There's nobody, Alex ain't on there, Mike is not on there. So I went in and sang it. And when I heard that again, whew. Because now it's about him too,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So you know, it's anyway, it's a special thing, and the cool thing about it is that we recorded digitally on tape. His board was handmade by Don Landy. You know, he was in there with soldering and guns. So that studio was really not near state of the art, nor is near it. And we made those records there, but they sound unique and great.
Yeah.
So remastering them brought out the bottom end, the bass, and things a little more. Made the tracks bigger, and God, they sound good.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
Way overdue.
It came out the day that Eddie 3 years to
that
the anniversary.
That was an accident.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. That I didn't know. No one knew. And I mean, that sounds so crazy that happened. I mean, that's spiritual stuff.
I was gonna say that felt. Did you feel once you found out?
I get goosebumps, man, because that was just happened to be.
Yeah.
And you know, Edward's up there, down there, over there, here, there, everywhere.
Yeah.
In this tap, I don't know where he is, but he, you know, pull a little string on that one, I would think, because that was so awesome. And I didn't find out. No one even talked about it in the press.
Wow.
Because no one really knew. And then somebody said the next week, oh, that was the day Eddie died. I'm going, whoa. I looked it up and said, wow, that's deep.
Yeah, I saw that date and that just jumped out at me. I mean, do you think there will be like a tribute show? I know people have talked about it here and there. You know, I don't know how Alex is doing. I mean, obviously, he's got to be going through it.
I'll just say real quick, as far as the tribute goes, I'm so disappointed how they've handled everything, including when I left the band, what they did, and they just, I don't know, the dysfunctional in that band. When I was in the band the first 9 years, we got along like freaking brothers and sisters, and we were happy together, and one big family. Things went wrong. You know, drugs and alcohol are a bad thing when it's, you know, it turns ugly, and it's just never been the same. And for them not to have done something for Eddie Van Halen, the greatest guitar player in the world, you know, on the planet, the greatest rock musician, I'm telling you, it's ugly, but it's not my job.
Sure.
You know, Mike and I are doing our thing, and we're going to go out next year or two again. I'm going to do this as long as I can. I don't know how much longer I can sing those songs and sing my own songs and go out and jump around on stage and do a great show performance. So as long as I can do it, I got to keep doing it. But I think we just keep adding more Van Halen songs to the set. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, Mikey saying he ain't talking about love last night. You know what I mean? We're serving the Van Halen stuff up pretty good.
That's awesome. Sammy, thank you, man.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for all the memories, the music.
Thank you.
1 year ago, the boys breaking the biggest story ever on this podcast, Joe Satriani confirming exclusively to Rock of Nations, he's in talks with the Van Halen camp about doing a tribute show to honor the late, great Eddie Van Halen. Rolling Stone picked it up, Eddie Trunk, the rock world went crazy. Let's relive it one more time. Joe Satriani, so great to have you on, man. I got to ask you the first question, and we'll get all into the new album and everything, but of course you saw the news that Jason Newsted, the statement that he made, it was to a Florida newspaper, I think, where he was talking about Alex Van Halen reached out to him and said, hey, I want to do a Van Halen tribute project and it would involve you also. Was there any truth to this? Can you talk about that?
You know, I've been talking with Alex and Dave for about a year about, you know, doing something, a tour, something like that, that was going to be a true, you know, tribute to Eddie and the Van Halen legacy. For me, it, you know, it was a terrifying
prospect,
of doing something like that, but I realized that it was something that would be a real labor of love for me. I was just so honored to take on the challenge. You know, that I know that it's very complicated, and all I can really say about it is that if it does happen, I know we'll make it the greatest thing ever for the fans, and we'll all celebrate together.
Yeah.
Not only the great Eddie Van Halen, but that great the legacy that that band created, the amazing amount of music and the goodwill and good vibes they created as a band. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, these things are always happening in the music industry, and you're supposed to keep very quiet about it because sometimes they don't work out, you know. Right. There's usually about, you know, like 10 like crazy ideas that float around, and musicians are always like, okay, I won't say anything about this because it may not work out. Don't want to hurt this person's feelings or disrupt any other business plans. So yeah, we were all pretty shocked that, Jason wanted to go public with it, because we were all sworn to silence.
How's Alex doing? I mean, you know, Alex, obviously, you know, he never did anything outside of Van Halen, of course, and he never really talked a lot in the press except for, you know, band interviews. I mean, how's he doing? How's Dave? I mean, just in the times that you've talked to them, obviously everyone's devastated. And how are you doing since the passing of Eddie?
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, just getting to know Alex has been really wonderful. He's a great human being, and obviously, you know, I can't imagine, you know, losing a brother that way so soon. And they were really close, like, you know, that's just, their relationship was really quite unique. I don't know. I don't know Dave that well. You know, I think I've only met him once, maybe at when Steve invited us to see the David Lee Roth tour. I was in Australia with Mick Jagger at the time, so we all went. It was quite an experience. But I've only spoken to Dave on the phone a number of times over the last, I don't know, 25 years or so. So, but you know, he's David Lee Roth. They're Van Halen. I mean, it's a big deal. And like I said before, if it ever does happen, it would be a great honor and a terrifying challenge.
Right.
Eddie is not, you can't reproduce what he did. It's just, you can't. You can learn the notes and, you know, you can be taught all the fingerings and get the gear and everything, but there was only one Eddie, and he was the epitome of an original genius, you know?
Yeah.
But if it does happen, I know that Alex will make sure that it's the right way to do it.
Right. You played with Sammy and everything. I didn't know because, you know, our minds, you know how fans are. We're just like, oh, could Sammy be involved? I mean, you know, not that we want to jump ahead of things, but I guess it's something that's not solid, right? It's just, there's talk, basically, right?
I know. Yeah, it's unusual because I'm kind of like in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I understand, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I looked at it from a musical point of view, and you know, I've spent most of my life trying to memorize my own catalog.
I don't know how you do that.
Which is, there are a lot of notes, right, to memorize and to pull off a show and to stay focused on it. So every time something like this comes up, like Chickenfoot, it's like, okay, I got to make space in my brain for a whole other way of playing. And the great thing is that when you get together with like the guys in Chickenfoot, their personalities are so huge and they bring so much talent that you don't really have to be so big. You just be a part of something, you know? And, the thought of, doing, you know, representing all the eras of Van Halen, that's pretty daunting. That's a lot of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, just from a guitar player's point of view, Eddie progressed remarkably as a player and as an inventor, and those two things, you know, they kind of went together from Van Halen 1 all the way to the last album. And when you sit down to actually learn it and pull it off, you go, wow, it's like, not only do I need talent, but I need specific gear, because certain things won't work unless you've got this amp and, you know, it's doing that, you know. Yeah. So That's also another thing to deal with.
When you were talking about Eddie Joe, do you consider him to be the most important guitarist of our time?
I guess I do. I don't know if it matters what I think, but it's part personal and part just, you know, I'm one of the multitudes of crazy fans out there. So, I think that when you hear the record and you read the articles, you see the pictures, you see the film clips, and then you have memories of seeing the band live and seeing Eddie live, you really see the total picture of what Eddie Van Halen was and what he brought to the world of music and guitar. So that's pretty simple, because there's plenty of examples of great composers, great technical players, fantastic entertainers, where they excel at certain points. But Eddie kind of like, he really pushed the envelope in so many different areas of music and of being a rock and roll entertainer. He was probably one of the most physical and funny, and yet dead serious when it came to music, you know, and you could hear it. And he and Alex obviously worked on everything until it was so completely unique and natural that everyone responded to it. Well, as soon as they heard it, they knew right away it was the real deal. So, you know, his musical inventions, they just became normal for guitar players. And that's pretty intense. A lot of us guitar players make up some silly ideas and things, but not all of them, let's say hardly any of them actually permeate like into, you know, the final design of every guitar, just about, you know. So when you think about stuff like that, you're really impressed, you know. But for me, it's just like as soon as I hear him play, I hear something really big. I can't put words to it. It's just truly amazing, and there's nothing that can really replace it, you know. So you can only, it's like when you hear Hendrix, you know, live at the Fillmore doing Machine Gun. There's nothing like it. It's just like this thing that happened that is the most unique and wonderful thing in the history of recorded rock and roll guitar. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. He just laid it down and was so far ahead of everybody that the world changed once that record came out. Everybody said, well, if you're going to be a guitar player, you know, you got to be able to do that, understand it, manipulate your guitar like that, you know. I mean, just think of what he did for the guitar itself. I can get real nerdy about this. So you guys,
please do. Please do.
Yeah.
But when you just think about like what Hendrix did to the Stratocaster, and just, you know, just you take out the politics and the entertainment factor, and you know, he's playing on New Year's Eve and he had a new band and you know, that whole thing, and you just go, okay, there's a guy who said, okay, here's a Stratocaster, look what I can do with this, and the rest of you guys are asleep compared to what I'm doing on this little piece of wood that was designed in the early 50s, you know. And and Eddie did the same thing. He said, okay, you know, yeah, I grew up listening to Hendrix and Page and everybody else, and but look what I can do with this put together Stratocaster, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, very few people do that, but you know, time goes by and you can look back and you go, that was fun, that was exciting, that was trendy, but that guy, like, he not only was it all of that, but he changed the world. And yeah. And that's what it did.
Go ahead, Shane. You
no, I just a quick follow-up about Eddie, because we love Eddie.
Yeah,
a lot. What song of Eddie's do you like to play the most? Which one do you like to go back to? I know there's a lot.
It's a good question, because I was thinking about that the other day and I thought, that is a weird choice, Joe. You know, if someone ever asked you, like, come up with a more interesting one, but it's Hear About It Later. I don't know why I love that song.
Oh, yeah.
I love the song. I love playing it. I can, you know, pick up my guitar and put on that track and just play along with it. And it's just something about it, maybe because I saw them play it live and it, you know, it was a moment, you know, but I'm not even sure I know what the song is about. Dave is extremely clever that way. He gives you the lyrics, but he kind of lets you kind of make up your own mind about what the song's about. So, hats off to Dave for figuring out how to do that. But yeah, there's so much Eddie in that one that is personal that that's what I hear, I think. And I could be wrong, but it's just, maybe because we were kind of like the same age and everything. And that just seemed like, wow, what a great composition. What a great way to use the guitar and effects pedals and changing keys. And it's just, and it's comfortable, and I can play it because some of the other things I just like, what,
And that's you saying that. So if you're saying that, we're like, wow.
Well,
the master Satch is like.
Everybody has things, all guitar players, they have things that they excel at. I learned this when I was teaching guitar a lot, that you could get a 16-year-old student in who could pick faster than you, but who was completely tone deaf. And you'd go like, what am I going to do with this young person who's got this great talent, but then there's this other part that's so lacking that I can't even fix it. And it baffles you, as a teacher. And sometimes you get students that can write great and they have perfect timing, perfect pitch, and they are just the slowest players ever. And, they come to you saying, how do I get faster? And, you want to say, that's not you. Like, it's not going to happen. But I wouldn't say that, but I'd say that to myself. I had to do that because I started teaching when I was very young, and I realized very early that I only had certain gifts that you would say were accelerated playing, but I had other gifts in quotation marks that maybe would never become, accelerated. And maybe the first time I learned that was when I was teaching Steve I. He was a 12-year-old kid. And within a matter of weeks, I saw him doing things that I knew he was going to surpass me in some of these gifts, that we all have as musicians. And I thought, wow, I just got to make sure I don't slow him down, because he's got some things that they're just going to take him into the stratosphere. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford.
The Rudy Sergeant.
Hey, this is Steve Hickey.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph.
And we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Hey!